aggressive. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sitko. I am the super fan for the Eagles. We are the podcast by the fans, for the fans. We're basically a bunch of guys, super fans from every single team, led by the fearless Pod Vader. Pod is really excited this weekend because it is the end of his revenge tour. Not the end, I should say, the pinnacle of the revenge tour as they take on the Colts tonight, the evil Patriots, may I say it. Before we get to that game, which is just about to start, actually about 10 minutes, I'm sure it's like I can hear a disturbance in the force. I can feel that evil like building in the background. But as we start this podcast, I have two super fans with us. One of our new super fans, James, who is our Houston super fan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
No, of course, man. We're excited to have you. Thank you for joining the ranks. James is one of those super fans who heard about an opening, wrote in, was very much a proven super fan and was able to join us, and we're excited to have him. Another super fan I have with me, one of my arch rivals here on the show, Cowboys super fan Brian. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing a lot better than I have been the last 3 weeks. Thankful for the bye week.
Nice. Yeah, totally. I don't know if a team needs the bye week more than your team. We'll talk about that. Remind me to bring that up. Well, I guess we can do it now, Brian. Who's coming back next week? Do you guys have anybody you think will be back when you guys take the field again?
It sounds like Randy Gregory for sure is going to be back. There's rumblings that Dez is going to be back. I don't know how much I buy into that, but we're overhauling the offense. So Matt Castle is going to be at quarterback. We're going to put Lael Collins in the starting lineup at left guard for Leary. And there's also been talk that Christian Michael, he's been getting a lot of run with the first team, that he's going to be the starting running back coming out of the bye week. So fantasy alert for all you guys out there. Christian Michael should be a hot pickup this coming week.
How much longer do you think on Romo and Bryant at this time?
Well, Romo's gone until at least the Miami game because he's on that IR designated to return. With Dez, I almost feel like it's any week now. I mean, he's got that Adrian Peterson kind of just Superman athletic body that he's going to recover faster than probably humanly possible. So it'd be nice to see him out there next week. I'm trying to keep my optimism at bay, but next week, 2 weeks, I would love to see Dez out there stretching the defense.
Scary, coming back fast. Randy Gregory looked awesome. Very impressive. Okay, so let us start off, Brian. We'll go right back to you with this first game of the week, the Thursday night game, Atlanta-New Orleans. No one expected New Orleans to win this game. What do you think? How did this game look?
Not true. I actually did pick New Orleans to win this game. Look, when you go into New Orleans in prime time, they are very difficult to beat. I believe they've won 19 of their last 21 primetime games in the Superdome, especially a rivalry game against Atlanta on the short week. A lot of things working in New Orleans' favor. One of the things that me and the Falcons superfan Tim talked about when we had our superfan battle a few weeks ago is that we just don't know how good Atlanta is because nobody they've beat is any good. And this was the perfect opportunity on a short week for New Orleans to crop up there and beat them. And they did, 31-21. Drew Brees still doesn't look Drew Brees-ish. He's still throwing it short. Doesn't look like he can stretch the ball down the field. But he used Benjamin Watson and made everybody forget that they don't have Jimmy Graham anymore. I was amazed that Atlanta just kept letting them get open. Atlanta, they just made too many mistakes. And they lost all the momentum at the beginning of the game on that punt block. They got down. And it really never felt like they were going to come back to me, that they had a chance to come back against New Orleans. Matt Ryan just, he's on that cusp of, you want to say he's in that top tier, but he just makes mistakes at times that you just shake your head and you wonder. New Orleans' game plan really going into this was, we were going to make Matt Ryan beat us. And that's what they forced Atlanta to do. Julio Jones, a little shaken up, wasn't quite himself. But a big win for New Orleans and Atlanta now, you kind of wonder, what did that undefeated record mean coming into the week? So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back going forward. You can't completely write off New Orleans. I think they're on their last leg. So they're going to need to roll off a few wins in a row to keep this momentum going. But a big win in the Superdome for New Orleans this week.
Which team is better on defense, New Orleans or Atlanta?
I will never pick a defense led by Rob Ryan in that question. So by default, I guess it would have to be Atlanta. But I'm not crazy about I've been saying from the beginning, I'm not crazy about Vic Beasley. I think he was overrated. I think he's going to be a bust. I think the best alignment that they drafted this year in Atlanta was Grady Jarrett. I'm not sold on that secondary, but by default, they're better than New Orleans' defense. These teams aren't going to be winning any 14 to 10 games anytime soon. So they're going to have to outscore each other for sure.
No, for sure.
I think like the most aggravating thing about Rob Ryan is he'll have a game like this where, I mean, the center for Atlanta just snapped the ball, and his exact quote was, I don't know what happened. I hit my butt. Like, and the announcers were all over it. Oh, look at what Rob Ryan is doing with this defense. And because of a game like this, he's going to get hyped up some more. And if he eventually does get fired from New Orleans, he'll still find two or three other jobs just because teams that he plays seems to make a lot of mistakes. I don't know if it's just a function of that division, but it's the land of second chances for Rob Ryan.
No, for sure. Yeah, not a fan. I mean, I'm a football fan because of his dad, Buddy Ryan. So to see a Ryan son do poorly, it just breaks my heart. And it breaks your dad's heart, Rob. Breaks your dad's heart, Rob Ryan. He's crying right now. He's almost going to die soon. Such a great man. And you can't do better on defense? Look at your brother. Although Rex didn't do great. Moving on to that game, Cincinnati-Buffalo. Rex cannot stop the juggernaut that is Cincinnati and that red-headed demon, Andy Dalton. Nice, Simon. I just want to give a shout out to Simon. You are 6-0 and undefeated, brother. That is crazy. Nobody saw that coming at the beginning of the season. I don't even think Simon can say he would have been that confident. That is an incredible record. Andy Dalton went 22 for 33, threw for 243 yards, 3 touchdowns. Hill and Bernard over 100 yards combined, not as an individual, but it's great that they have both of those guys and they can run behind both of them. Yeah, Buffalo, really not much sacks or pressure coming out of that unit in the way that you'd expect to see. No interceptions today. Dalton had one fumble, which I guess could be a sack. It was one play. You know, looked like they had one great defensive play. But other than that, they were just rolling on these guys. Any other thoughts on that game before we move on? Cincinnati-Buffalo.
I really don't think it's crazy at this point to say Cincinnati has the most diverse, the best arsenal of offensive weapons. Like we talked about, they have the two running backs. They've got A.J. Green. Marvin Jones had a huge game today. Tyler Eifert. Anytime you try and shut one thing down, they always have somewhere else they can go. Andy Dalton is spreading the ball around. That offense looks – it's hard to believe, but they look as good as anyone in the NFL offensively. And they do enough on defense at this point to where that undefeated record is completely justified.
Something that Cincinnati hasn't done in years past, and especially in like playoff games, primetime games, is they seem to actually be making halftime adjustments. They're not just sticking with the same game plan and saying, well, it will eventually work. I don't know if that's just a function of them finally having all their weapons healthy. I know Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert have both missed extensive periods of time, but maybe it's finally everything coming together.
Talking about things coming together, this Denver team, how are they pulling off these wins? Denver-Cleveland, James, you had a chance to look at this game. Denver's defense is pulling it off for them, and their offense is just continually shooting themselves in the foot. What did you think of this game?
I'm glad it was on the small TV. You could glance over. You could see things were happening, but unless you kind of squinted, you didn't really see just how bad it was. I know Manning's going to get blasted again this week. He had a couple interceptions, but just like Mike, the superfan, pointed out, a lot of this is actually on his receivers. The pick six, it was thrown a little bit behind Ronnie Hillman, but Hillman didn't even really make that great of an attempt to, you know, catch the ball, knock it down. And then once the interception was made, he kind of half-heartedly jogged after the defender. But it's one of those things, like, there were several drops during the game. By far, I don't know if you guys have seen the highlight yet, but driving down after the defense bailed out Peyton, they had about 30 seconds left in the end of the fourth quarter with a chance to win the game before overtime. Peyton throws a great ball to Emmanuel Sanders, and I don't know if Emmanuel just didn't think he got touched, but he stood up, kind of slow jogged to the end zone and just laid there while the clock ran out because they didn't have any timeouts left. It's just like the receivers aren't there or aren't as dialed in as they are in years past or what Peyton is kind of used to. What's nice, though, is the running game finally showed up. They went from one of the worst run offenses in the league up to averaging 4.6 yards per carry. That was one of the questions that Rob, the super fan for the Browns, had. Just how bad is the Cleveland's run defense? Turns out the answer is very bad. He wanted to know how good the passing game is for the Browns, and it's not great. The yards per attempt for Josh McCown was down to 5.5 yards. That's the third worst that the Broncos have allowed all season. Granted, it's kind of only, it's only six games, but I mean, 5.5 yards per attempt, you're looking at like rookie quarterbacks or not to disparage Sam Bradford, but Sam Bradford, when he was on the Rams, always checking down. You're not going to be able to sustain a good passing attack, just 5.5 yards per attempt. Outside of that, Mike was spot on. Brian McManus was going to be their all-star today. It was a sloppy game, especially in overtime. For a while there, I was actually rooting for it to end in a tie because it just didn't seem like any one team wanted to win the game. In overtime, there was a muff punt that Denver was able to fall back on top of, but they're finding ways to win the games, but it's not very pretty to look at.
No, remarkable. I can't even believe it. Chicago, Detroit, more teams that how could they possibly, just on the other side of the spectrum, when everything is going wrong and you can't figure out how to win a game, I guess. Somebody had to win today in Detroit, between Chicago and Detroit, and Detroit got their first win in the column. What did you think of this game, Brian? How do these two NFC teams look?
Yeah, I don't know if there was a TV small enough to put this game on. It was a battle of bottom feeders. It was exciting. A lack of defense as to be expected in this game. So Detroit, like I said, gets the overtime win. And this is one of those where we see that just tantalizing potential of Matt Stafford. Throws for over 400, throws for four touchdowns. Rediscovers this guy named Calvin Johnson, who's pretty darn good. Maybe you should throw it to him once in a while. So Calvin has a huge game. But the end of this game to me was hilarious. So Detroit going in third and goal on the 12. Chicago, Pernell McPhee gets a penalty for roughing the passer, which if anyone who sees it, questionable for sure. So Detroit gets another shot. They score, take a 3-point lead. Chicago now has the ball. Somehow in three plays, Chicago took the ball from their own 20 to Detroit's 7. Really, weren't even challenged. A couple throws to Alshon and a terrible pass interference penalty and get an easy game-tying field goal. And honestly, that's what these two teams are. They're two teams that don't know how to win. They don't know how to put teams away. This was one in overtime that was going back and forth that I thought was going to end in a tie as well. Chicago Tom, our Bears super fan, that was his main criticism of the Bears, was that in overtime they were super conservative, just running Forte into the line when the answer all game for the Bears was on the outside, was going to Alshon Jeffrey, going to Martellus Bennett. But they just got super conservative, waiting for Detroit to make a mistake. Didn't happen. They throw the bomb to Calvin. Calvin gets him down close. Field goal, game over. Like you said, one of these two teams had to win, but ultimately it's inconsequential because neither one of these teams, Chicago or Detroit, is going to do anything this year. I'm sorry to say for Detroit, I thought they had a little bit of hope, but I think this was pretty well expected from Chicago Tom and his Bears. So exciting game, not much defense, but not much consequences after the fact either.
Nice. Yeah, don't spend too much time on these teams. We'll get to them more at the end of the year when we're figuring out which one's going to be drafting first and who's going to be going for the big quarterback to replace one of these two quarterbacks, possibly. Houston, Jacksonville. James, this is your team. Texans, they get a win. How did it look? Were you stoked? How did it play?
I mean, I don't want to jump to too many conclusions. I've been the super fan for 1 week and we're 1-0.
Nice.
I'm not willing to throw down Super Bowl predictions yet or book tickets, but in the land of correlation, that's a good one to go on. It was basically the game that you would expect that I expected Houston to play all year. And they finally, managed to execute a decent game plan. some big takeaways, though, is we made Blake Bortles at times look like the next Russell Wilson. We lost containment. We got overly aggressive. I don't know if J.J. Watt just was seeing red from getting six sacks on him last year and thinking that he can get six sacks on one game. But J.J. Watt, hands on his hips, just trying to chase Blake Bortles around. I was ready to rip into the run defense just looking at the raw numbers, but once you take out the Blake Bortles scrambles, they were finally holding, granted, the elite running back of Toby Gerhardt to less than 3 yards per carry. Hopefully that the run defense is finally starting to step up. It's bad in Jacksonville. The game is a lot closer than what the score would indicate. Blake Bortles was basically good until he wasn't. He made some good plays, and then all of a sudden he throws this pick six, and the game just gets out of hand from there. The Texans only threw the ball 36 times. I say only because they were very close to averaging 50 throws or 50 attempts per game. Even though we knocked 14 attempts off this week, DeAndre Hopkins is still going to get his. He had 15 targets again. His first touchdown pass was basically Brian Hoyer throwing into double coverage because DeAndre Hopkins was waving his arm wildly. And I guess when you're Brian Hoyer, you don't question DeAndre Hopkins. His second one was a much nicer, just wide open along the sideline. And then this game definitely has me questioning, again, what is a catch in the NFL? You got to see it. DeAndre Hopkins had a great holding the ball up against the side of his helmet as he's rolling out of bounds. The ball clearly rotated a little bit while he was going to the ground, but apparently he'd already made the catch. But Jacksonville wasted a challenge on that. They were going to get called for a 5-yard holding anyway. So no matter what, Houston was going to get the first down. So I was kind of curious why they wasted a timeout in the second half to challenge a call that was going to result in a first down either way. Yeah, great game to build on. Great game to go into our we got a stretch against Miami and Tennessee now. So we can easily go into the bye week 4-4. And if Pod Vader gets his wish in Revenge Gate tonight, we're only going to be one game out of first in the division, as sad as that sounds.
Wow, that's fascinating. I didn't realize you were that close, but that's great. You guys are in a very similar place to the Eagles, right? Yeah, just like keeping in it, maybe have a chance to make a run. Kansas City, Minnesota. I watched this game. Kansas City's now at 1-5 after falling to Minnesota. That's really troublesome. Basically, I think it comes down to that Kansas City has no running game. And without a running game, Alex is really not enough. They put up 10 points. That's not going to win many games in the NFL these days. Bridgewater was able to throw two interceptions, have lots of mistakes, and still be fine. Peterson really is not running the ball either. Peterson went 26 for 60, which is not nice numbers. But on top of that, he had a 23-yarder. So you take that 23-yarder out, and he was 25 for 37. Which is just nasty. Like, that is so bad. I know KC has a good defense, but that's incredible to shut down a weapon like Peterson like that. I'm glad they kept giving it to him, but they clearly was not enough. They were able to pull out the win, 16-10, very low-scoring game, but fascinating. I expected Kansas City to step up here and make a win for them to lose to Minnesota. Yeah. I don't know. I think they may be done for the season. And then Minnesota, not that they're going to make a run or anything, but Minnesota's standing up. They remind me kind of the Raiders of the NFC, was just a team that is, they seem to be getting their pieces together, and they're formidable now. They're not a team that everyone thinks they can just go through and beat. We'll see where they end up. Washington, New York Jets. Brian, you had a chance to watch this game. What did you think?
It was really a tale of two halves in this game. We got to see why Washington is so bad, and the Jets are really a good team. The Jets basically handed Washington three turnovers in the first half and said, here, build a lead, jump out on us. We'll spot you whatever many points you want. And Washington couldn't take advantage of it. Then we were up 13-10 at the half. And once the second half came around, Washington started turning the ball over. Kirk Cousins turned in Kirk Cousins, throwing some picks. And the Jets took advantage of that. Chris Ivory is just running like a monster. Another big game, 140 touch today. They have so much balance on that offense with Marshall. Decker scored in, I think, 5 straight. Fitzpatrick really is the perfect captain for this offense. He doesn't have to do too much. You can rely on that great defense. This team, I'm so intrigued to see them playing New England next week. I know New England's all geared up for Indianapolis tonight, but you better be ready next week for Todd Bowles and the Jets. I think Todd Bowles right now for sure coach of the year. And so that's going to be a huge matchup next week. For Washington, just want to remind you guys that you had a chance to draft Leonard Williams at 5th overall, and you passed on him to take Brandon Scherff. And that translated to 34 rushing yards on 17 carries today. So that's going to haunt you going forward a bunch. And Ryan Kerrigan got hurt, who is their best defender. I don't see much hope for Washington. I know our division is garbage, Mark, but even still, I think it's a 3-team race at this point. I think we can just shove Washington to the side. It's time for them to start exploring options at quarterback. Obviously, Cousins isn't the long-term answer. I know they don't want to go back to RG3, but I feel like you have to do it at least once. You have to know it for sure that he's not the answer and write him off. Because you can't keep playing games like this where you can't run the ball and you can't rely on Kirk Cousins to throw it. And I don't think DeSean Jackson coming back is going to solve anything. So Washington, much like Kansas City, I'm writing them off. They're done this year. Jets looking up. Like I said, game of the week next week is going to be Patriots-Jets, and I expect a huge effort out of New York. Show that this is going to be a 2-team race in the AFC East.
That would be a remark. Just pull that off. I would totally agree with you. I don't know if I'm ready to say Todd Bowles of the year, but if he beats the Pats, I'm signing up right there. I'm only coach of the year if he pulls that off. Very impressive. I don't know why Washington only plays well against us. We do, especially Cousins. I mean, our secondary sucks. This maybe has something to do with it. But regardless, very, very impressive for the Jets to just, yeah, them like that. Just have no way of stopping them. I don't think if the Jets offense is very prolific, but like you said, Fitzpatrick did a great job of guiding them today. Moving on to this Arizona-Pittsburgh game. I watched this game, 29 for 45, throws for 41 yards, only one touchdown, puts up a total of 13 points. Acceptable. I mean, that is a lot of yards to throw for and only have 13 points. That's crazy. And I don't think if Pitt defense is being some, you know, if one of these two teams, I was going to put my money on the defense, it's definitely Arizona over Pittsburgh. I know they're playing on the East Coast. They're playing in Pittsburgh. It makes sense. The impressive story that everyone's going to be talking about, you're going to see this all over, is Landry Jones. Vic goes down. Landry Jones comes in the third quarter, and this is really when the game turns on. He went 8 for 12, 168 yards, 2 touchdowns. Really got the spark going on this offense and got it moving. Le'Veon Bell obviously was playing well all game. Not amazing game for him, but he did fine. Landry Jones, for those of you who don't know who he is, which I had no idea watching him play today, he was a fourth rounder in 2013. Obviously, this begs the question. I'd love to hear what you guys think. Should they next week, is it Vic or Jones? Who plays until Roethlisberger's ready to come back?
I think it has to be Landry Jones. I mean, he showed today. The one thing you have to do as the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers is get the ball in your hands of your playmakers between Brown and Martavis Bryant, who had a monster game, and Le'Veon Bell. You have tons of weapons out there. All you have to do is get the ball in their hands. That long touchdown to Bryant, that 82-yarder, he threw the ball 10 yards, and Bryant did the rest. He has the capability of doing that. It's clear Michael Vick does not. Landry Jones has to be the quarterback going forward until Big Ben comes back.
Do you agree?
Yeah, it's got to be Jones. Oh, yeah, absolutely has to be Jones. I mean, they resorted to running. I saw a gadget play, kind of like a little flea flicker, where they go to run Le'Veon Bell up the middle. He tosses it back to Vic, and Vic just takes off to the outside. Like, that would be great if this was, you know, 2007, 2006 Michael Vick, but it's just not getting it done. You just watch Antonio Brown, you know, jogging back to the huddle, kind of half-heartedly making his blocks on the runs, and it's him just yelling at Michael Vick, or him not necessarily yelling, but just having very poor body language with Michael Vick, and you know, like you guys said, that's your playmaker at this point with Ben out.
Very fascinating. For Pittsburgh to be winning these games without Roethlisberger, they're going to be in great shape when he comes back. They were early on one of my team picks for the Super Bowl. We did like some predictions at the beginning, and I thought they'd be coming out of AFC and possibly winning the Super Bowl. I got really scared of those picks at the beginning of the year, but as they're going, they may have just enough defense that they can get Roethlisberger back. They have that amazing trio of weapons on the offense. It'll be interesting to see what they do, if they can make a run. Arizona still 4-2, still very competitive in that division, especially as Seattle is falling apart. But let's first, before we get to that game, move on to Miami and Tennessee. James, you watched this game. What did you think?
Much like Houston, this was kind of like the best case scenario for Miami, or kind of what every Miami fan should have envisioned going into the season. You're playing the Tennessee Titans, which reside in the dreadful AFC South, so you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt. But, Lamar Miller's alive. I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, but averaging close to 6 yards per attempt. And so 19 carries, 113 yards. His longest carry was only 22. So even if you take that one long carry out, he's still well over the 4 yard per carry mark. I'm never a fan of changing a coach, in the middle of the season. I don't really see the upside of it. I don't know if this is going to be one of those things like a rising tide, brings up all, raises any boat. And maybe Philbin was just so bad that, you plug anybody in and you're going to get, regress back to the mean a little bit. I'm really not looking forward to the repeating of the stat of only one coach since, 1969 has made the playoffs when they took over a team halfway through the season. Mostly because good teams don't fire their coaches. Typically if you're on a team that gets their coach fired, you're probably weren't going to make the playoffs in the first place. The super fan Ron, he wanted to see the defense come to play, pointing out that they were on pace for a stellar 4 sacks for the entire year. And I guess Cameron Wake wanted to go out and impress Ron personally. If he's not NFL Defensive Player of the Week, I don't know who could be. Cameron Wake by himself, 4 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. The rest of the defense also sacked Mariota 2 other times. So they went from 1 sack coming in, and they left. Now they're at 7 sacks for the year. I don't think that NFL record low of 11 team sacks is going to fall. Tannehill looked like a competent quarterback. I realize I'm viewing that through the Brian Hoyer spectrum of competent quarterbacks, but you look at his stat line and you see the 2 interceptions. One of them was tipped off of his tight end's hands. I'm willing to give him a pass on that one, even if he kind of, laser beamed it in there. It's great, competent passing game, great run game, and then just a smothering defense that made Mariota look like the rookie that he is. They had a couple of roughing the passer penalties, which one of them was borderline. The other one was pretty, I don't want to call it obvious, but it's obvious in what would be today's NFL protecting the quarterback. Zach Mettenberg came in just to stem the bleeding and let Mariota take the rest of the day off. It was a lot of bad for Tennessee.
San Diego, Green Bay. Brian, you had a chance to look at this game. What did you think of this this very, very, very close game? Really came down to the very last play. They were not able to pull it out, but what'd you think?
Yeah, San Diego fans have to be having conniptions right about now. Week after week, just, these heart-stopping games, and they just keep falling on the short end of it. They lose by 7 to Green Bay. As we talked about on the preview show earlier this week, this was going to be a close game. A lot of people weren't sure why. This was a double-digit spread, and it turned out to be a very close game down to the end. Melvin Gordon goes out, and San Diego just decides, we're just going to chuck it all over the field. We're not even going to bother with the running game. We're going to put it in Phillip Rivers' hands, and we're going to let him throw it 65 times for 503 yards. Unfortunately, he needed 506 yards. But I give him a lot of credit. Put the ball in the hands of the guy who can make plays. They weren't able to run with Woodhead and Oliver. So just let Rivers back there. And we always talk about how the short passing game is an extension of the run game. And really a lot of those Keenan Allen passes were essentially to me, long handoffs. Keenan Allen had a monster game, 14 catches, 157 yards. He could have been looking at, NFL record territory for those 20 catches had it not been for that hip injury. But again, another heartbreaker for San Diego. Flip it to Green Bay side. They're 6-0, and so you really can't say anything bad about them. But I think after this week, a lot of people aren't going to see them as the, you know, as right up there with New England. They have a lot of holes, and I think the that missing Jordy Nelson, it's really evident that their offense isn't clicking quite on the same level we're used to. Cobb is still banged up. Eddie Lacy is still banged up. And don't get me wrong, James Starks had a great game himself, but it just doesn't seem like Aaron Rodgers has the continuity on offense that he's had in years past. And again, we're saying this, and they still scored 27 points. So Green Bay's got some things to figure out. A lot of people are wondering just how good this defense is. They gave up a ton of yards, yes, but they held when push came to shove. I think what we saw from San Diego especially is just a microcosm of the NFL in that you can move the ball up and down the field with your passing game all you want, but if you can't run the ball, you can't score touchdowns. And we saw, and this goes back to Arizona as well, teams that are just struggling to run the football, and you can't put up points like that. You move the ball in between the 20s, but you have to find some way to punch it in when you're in close. So I think they're going to continue to struggle because of that. Like I said, Green Bay, they're the best team in the NFC right now, hands down, but I think the gap is a lot narrower than it was coming into this week.
Yeah, that really surprised me. San Diego played great. I would never have thought San Diego would be able to keep up with Green Bay, especially in Green Bay. Those were all records. You were talking about Rivers throwing all those attempts, all those completions and those yards. That's all for a San Diego quarterback, Verasive. There was a really interesting momentum shift I felt in this game. As Rivers was mounting the comeback of that drive, trying to get the final 7 points, he was just driving and really making some amazing plays, getting out of pressure, fired up, going down. And then all of a sudden they got down to like the 3, and it was first and goal. And it just felt like the entire team took this breath. And it was this idea of like, oh, we're going to score. There's no question. And then they stopped them 4 downs in a row, and they didn't score. And I don't know, there was something of that downshift that I was like, this is, that killer instinct all of a sudden is gone. And there's something, and I don't take anything for his, he clearly is fighting the whole time. But I think he may not have enough people around him with that kind of killer instinct to just take that. Before that moment, I would have wanted them to go for 2 to try to steal the game and win it, not even go into overtime. Because I think you go into overtime against Aaron Rodgers and Lambeau, and it's like, what are you doing? But once I saw they couldn't score from 3 out with 4 tries, it's like, no, man, I guess if you'd scored, you should have kicked the extra point, because you clearly, they were going to shut you down at the goal line. And I think, like you said, if you can't run, you know, Woodhead trying to punch in there at the end, he really can't do that. They're just going to come and toss him backwards. But yeah, really interesting game. James, you were looking at the Carolina-Seattle game. Carolina is 5-0, guys. Carolina is 5-0 with no offensive weapons anyone is frightened of, other than Olsen. Show some respect, I guess, Sitko. But regardless, Seattle loses at home to go 2-0. James, what did you think of this game?
Well, I mean, it's no surprise that Seattle Seahawks can't defend the tight end. They haven't been able to do that for, you know, 3 years, 4 years now. It's still awesome to see Greg Olsen running up and down in their secondary. I'm the Houston super fan currently living in Seattle, so it's I have good amount of disdain for the 12s up there. But what's wrong with them right now is it's all about that offensive line, and this was the battle of two very bad offensive lines. And when it came down to the wire, Carolina's was able to hold together just long enough to put a couple extra points on the board. I mean, Russell Wilson was sacked 3 times, hit 6 times. Cam Newton was sacked 4 times, knocked down 6 additional times. It led to some great rushing stats for them as they both kind of, you know, ran for their lives. But you take away Russell Wilson from the Seattle rushing statistics, Marshawn Lynch is only getting 3.2 yards per carry. They really, really miss Max Unger up there. Sure, they got Jimmy Graham out of the deal, and he put up a great game finally, 140 yards, 8 receptions. But you know, until they get that offensive line worked out where Russell Wilson can stop being forced to do Russell Wilson things and that crazy reverse pivot where he can then throw back across his body for 40 yards like it's no big deal, they're going to continue to struggle. It can't really be overstated that they should be 1-5 or very easily could be 1-5 with that last second punch out of Calvin Johnson's fumble that may or may not have been, or that should have been a penalty. And who knows, we can't do revisionist history at that point. So, Carolina is legit. They're a very scary team. And all of a sudden that NFC South went from being, you know, kind of a laughing stock to, you know, a definite powerhouse with them in Atlanta. Jonathan Stewart isn't going to be, you know, great, but, you know, he averaged nearly 4 yards per carry. They mixed in Mike Tolbert and Fozzie Whitaker effectively. And so the Carolina rushing game was able to get them, you know, get just enough pressure off of Cam and keep the Seattle defense honest enough that you can get those long routes by Greg Olsen. I mean, Seattle's upcoming schedule is very favorable for them. They get San Francisco, they get Dallas before Romo and probably before Dez comes back, but they're playing at Dallas. And I don't see them being heavily favored in that Dallas game. And even if they are favored, I'd be tempted to take Dallas at home over the Seahawks right now, which is kind of a scary proposition from what we thought going into the season. Meanwhile, the Panthers' upcoming schedule is just it looks great. They have your Eagles coming up. They've got Indy. I don't see any reason why they don't go into Week 9 against Green Bay as a battle of two undefeated teams.
We'll see if there's something to say about that, but it'll be tough. The fact that they were able to beat Seattle, it makes me think that, you know, our chances are not great, but we'll see how it goes. What were we going to say, Brian?
I think Monday morning, everyone's going to talk about how great a win this was for Carolina. And don't get me wrong, I'm on board with Carolina being one of the best teams in the NFC. But this, to me, is not a great win. I've been all year screaming my favorite four-word phrase, Seattle is a fraud. And for all the reasons you just said, James, offensive line problems, secondary issues, can't cover the tight end, can't run the ball. You can't rely on Russell Wilson as a drop-back passer to be your primary source of offense. If you can't run with Marshawn Lynch and you can't establish that identity of defense and running the ball, to me, Seattle is not an elite team anymore. And Carolina going into Seattle to win really should be expected. I've said from the beginning of the year, I don't expect Seattle to make the playoffs. And nothing that I've seen so far would make me hesitate from that statement right now. I think they're going to be a 500 team at the end of the year. I know their schedule eases up, but to be honest, I'm worried about them going into San Francisco on a short week. And it's such a precipitous drop off from, you know, Super Bowl to, oh my goodness, you're staring 2-5 in the face. And to be worried about a San Francisco team who is in shambles really speaks to just how far this team has fallen. I don't see them putting it together in time. And again, I don't see them making the playoffs. Seattle, they're going to have to figure this out. And, you know, the model that they have right now that they've paid Russell Wilson, it's not going to work. So I think, you know, you're staring at an 8-8 team. And sorry, Seattle, but you're going to be watching the playoffs from home this year.
It's interesting. Both of you bring up the can't cover the tight end. I wonder if that has to do with just their simple cover three. And if that's just the kind of glaring hole in that system, because if you think about it, yeah, they're doing a lot of zone underneath and then they have only one high safety in the middle there and the two outside safeties. There's seams. I mean, it's just the basic seam route and then going up and cutting out or digs should be open in that. I wish I knew more about how their coverage exactly works. We'll have to get their super fan to talk to them about that. But very interesting. Go ahead.
I wish they knew more about how their coverage worked, because I'm sure they're trying to figure it out. It was amazing how wide open Greg Olsen was on that touchdown. Incredible.
Yeah. Well, to me, this is the problem of only having one safety that can cover. Go ahead.
I was going to say, a good chunk of it is you let, you know, like Brandon Browner, he's going to get paid big money, and, you know, he's a big part of what the Legion of Boom had going on. But at his core, he's not like a top 10 defensive player. He just fit really well into that system. And the way Pete Carroll has always operated up in Seattle is, you know, bring me the defensive players, especially defensive backs, defensive safeties, And I can take an average one, make them work in this system. And, you know, I hate to use, you know, the system, and I'm sure that, you know, a system player is kind of your taboo phrase up in Philadelphia right now. But they're trying to replace, before Cam Chancellor came back this year, they're using Kerry Williams to replace Cam Chancellor. And, you know, in that first game against the Rams, Kerry Williams is spinning around, falling down because on certain plays, just because, you know, he's young, he's inexperienced, he hasn't gotten coached up yet. And I think their policy of just letting their players walk and say, you know, we can get more talent in and coach them up, you know, a la New England and their wide receivers, it's finally catching up to them.
Yeah, and I think they're in one of those, they're similar to the Saints. Saints are further down this path. I don't think they have the money to retain a lot of the guys they had to get rid of, which, you know, just due to cap issues, they're kind of like losing players. This final game here, Baltimore, San Francisco. Yeah, as you were talking about, San Francisco and Seattle have a battle coming up on a short week, Thursday night. But in this game, Flacco, I mean, this comparison really says it all. Flacco, 33 for 53. That's a lot of attempts. Throws for 343 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Kaepernick, 16 for 27, literally like half, throws for 340 yards. He attempted and completed half as many passes, and he was only 3 yards less. He was 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. And the difference there, really, if you look at it, the quarterbacks aren't the – I mean, I think – I don't mean to say Kaepernick is better than Flacco, but it really comes down to weapons. The only thing Flacco has to throw to is Steve Smith. And then for Kaepernick, he had 3 different receivers who had 89 yards or more. That's really remarkable. I've got to give Cap credit for all the crap he's been taking, and really for how much crap this team has been taking, as if they're going to be just totally worthless this year. I want to point out they're definitely better than Baltimore. There's no comparison. They are a much better team than Baltimore, even without the Harbaugh brother and without half of their defense. They're still playing better than Baltimore. So whatever that is, I don't know. Rex, speak up. I don't know what the hell is wrong with your team. They're playing like poop. But San Francisco looked like a real team, like your comment you were making earlier. San Francisco looked totally like a real team. I think they do have a chance to beat Seattle, especially on a short week. I think that favors San Francisco, if anybody, just because they're not a really great team. And, if you know, might as well play them on a short week and have your chance to take advantage. Yeah, do you guys have any thoughts on this game? Any thoughts on Baltimore or San Francisco? Are we ready to write Baltimore off?
Absolutely. Baltimore is done. Kansas City is done. 6 weeks in, I never thought I'd be saying that. Baltimore looks, like you said, no weapons on offense. The loss of Suggs is just, I think, without that leader on defense, they look lost. Yeah, time to write Baltimore off.
And not that I think San Francisco
they're 1-5 in a division with an undefeated team.
Yep, that'll do it, right? What do you guys think of Deflate Gazi, Revenge Gazi, as we're going into tonight? I just would love to hear what you guys is. It's already going to be over by the time you appear this podcast. So right now, half an hour in, let's look at it real quick.
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
The spirit of Pod Vader.
So looking at this real quick, is there a score yet in this game? 7-7. Game is tied. End of the first. Who's going to win this game, guys? What are your predictions?
I still have to go with New England, even knowing that the score is 7-7.
Nice. You're taking New England? What do you think, Ray?
I'll still take New England, but my biggest problem with this whole revenge tour, we're going to crush Indianapolis by 70. Last time I checked, Indianapolis is a professional football team as well, and this isn't just New England gets to decide how much they're going to beat teams by. Now, granted, this could look like a foolish statement when this podcast actually hits the air and New England has won by 50. But as we're sitting right now, this whole we're going to put 60, we're going to put 70 on them, we're going to crush. No, like they're a good team. They haven't been playing like it, but they're a good team. You guys are a very good team in New England. But this isn't just pick your score. Like this is going to be a game. And this will be a good win if New England wins in Indianapolis. I don't think it's going to be some 30-point blowout. It'll be a close game down to the end. So I just – New England fans, Pod, Siska, just ugh. What I would give for Indianapolis to win this game.
I'm backing you to keep the mojo going. I'm calling Indianapolis is going to pull this out. Some crazy ending is going to win it. We'll see if it goes down. Right now, to close out the show, you're going to hear my super fan battle with the super fan. It's the Eagles-Giants game is Monday night. They are coming to Philadelphia. I think we are going to win. You can hear my Super Panel and hear me argue with Samuel about that. We are Next Fan Up. Please follow us at NFU Podcast on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for Next Fan Up. Thursday, we will have our next show previewing Week 7. Pod Vader will be hosting that. I'm here every Sunday night. Again, this is Mark Sitko. Thanks to my super fans, Brian from our Cowboys fan. We had two guys from Texas tonight. Also, thank you so much, James. Your first show, you did awesome from Houston and the Texans team. Everybody else, have a good night. We will talk to you on the other side. All right, for this Super Battle, we have, I am Mark Sitko, I'm actually involved in the Super Battle, Monday Night Football, the Giants are coming to our stadium, the Link, in Philadelphia, and we're taking on the Giants, hopefully for a win, and the division lead. Here with me tonight is Samuel, our Giants super fan. How you doing, Samuel?
I'm doing good. We have to come up with a different word than lead in the division. So I don't think any of these teams can lead the division.
No, that's a great point. In our division, it's more, who's at the front of the line currently? Yeah, talk about a whole bunch of mediocrity. Regardless, who's going to win this game, Samuel? I want to kick it off with you. How are you feeling? Are you confident? What are going to be the keys to the game?
I think I'm confident. The Giants tend to lose that game when everybody first starts believing in them, which was this past week at the 49ers, and we pulled that one out. I like the extra day of rest that this game is on Monday night. It gives a couple of injuries some time to heal. I think we're pretty good. I haven't been very impressed with the Eagles. I haven't seen much of their games. They've played a little boring football through the first couple of games, so they fell off my radar. But I'm excited to see what happens. Eagles-Giants games always tend to be entertaining.
No, for sure, for sure. When you say injuries, who are you guys getting back? Where are you at with that stuff?
I think it's a little too early. I've been combing through whatever I can find. And Odell Beckham still has his hamstring injury. Randall has a hamstring injury. On defense, a bunch of injuries. That linebacker, of course, is taking some hits with Beason and Kennard out. You know, it's not that we're losing very strong players. It's that the players that to cover for those average players are really just not good NFL-level players. So that's where you see the drop-off. That's where you see, big gains on being gained on this defense.
Nice, nice. Interesting. So with those injuries, how bad is Odell Beckham? Is there a chance he doesn't play in this game?
I don't think so. I think, you saw him out there at the end of the game. He's had a history of hamstring injuries. Hamstring injuries are notoriously tough to deal with. Man, he is something else. I'm just impressed now when he catches the ball, his start-stop speed. Every time you think he touches it, you think he's taking it to the house. He's an incredible player. It's awesome. I just don't see if he's healthy and he's playing, I don't see anybody on the Eagles being able to cover him. That's the truth.
No, I agree. I agree completely. For me, the keys of the game is definitely Eli and ODB. If we can shut him down, though, I'm not that worried about much else. People on Twitter, I'm getting attacked by Giants fans who are saying that Shane Vereen is something we need to worry about. And I am not that concerned. I respect Shane Vereen, but our run defense is very solid. I'm not too concerned about that. Also, as he comes out of the backfield, we have people like our Hicks, our rookie this year, and Kendricks, hopefully, if he's healthy enough to play, that can cover a shifty running back who's good catching the ball. So I'm not that concerned about that, but definitely mad respect for ODB. I think Beckham Jr. is going to do great, and it'll be hard to stop him. But I don't know. My confidence comes from the fact that I think we're going to put up points. You guys have the 32 worst pass defense, which I don't – that's my big question for you, I guess I should say. I feel confident because I think you're going to have more trouble stopping our run game than we will yours, and then we only have to worry about your one receiver, and we have a lot more weapons you have to worry about in the passing game, especially from tight end and out through all the receivers. But when it comes to why is your pass defense so bad when you have DRC and you have Prince, right? Like, with those two cornerbacks, I would assume your secondary would be decent. What's wrong with the secondary?
And we also have Landon Collins, who's in his first year, is really becoming an impressive player. I think that the stats are misleading because in the beginning of games, this defense is stout. you know, it's hard to throw on them because they're fresh. But as the game wears on and those pass rushers just get a little more tired, you see quarterbacks having all day to throw on them, and no defense is good enough that with no pressure that you can't get thrown on. So that's where it becomes an issue. Kaepernick was, if you watch the first half this past week, he wasn't incredible in the first half. Then in the second half, once he started moving around and these guys started getting tired, you saw those big gains opening up. And that's where this defense really struggles. That's where the loss of depth of, you know, having Kerry Wynn in there on pass downs because you don't have Jason Pierre-Paul. You know, these are things that really hurt the team on the margins. And later in the games when, you know, there is that lack of energy, there is a little bit of tiredness creeping, and you see these things really affecting teams. And I think that's where, you know, this pass defense starts to give a big plays.
The lack of a pass rush. I see you have 7 sacks, which isn't horrible, but you guys are known, I mean, obviously with Spagnuolo especially, as a team that is going to get after the quarterback. How do you feel without, you know, JPP? How is your pass rush doing? Are you worried about it? What's the situation?
Yeah, it's worrisome. You know, Spagnuolo's been, I think, for some reason, he's paired up with the Giants. It's magic, and he is really getting 120% of the potential that this defense has. I don't think he has the players for it. I think that's it. I think he's doing the best he can. It's just a lack of talent. And, you know, hopefully, you know, one or two guys can step up and generate some rush on these guys. I like the interior pressure with Hankins and Jenkins. It's just Jenkins seems to always be getting nicked during games and missing plays. And, you know, all these things kind of play into each other where you're not great to begin with. Once you start making those small mistakes and those things start happening, you really see deterioration along the defense.
With the Eagles, I think the players I'm excited to see you guys go up against on defense is definitely Fletcher Cox, just to see what he does. And Benny Logan are wreaking havoc right now on the defensive line. And I'm excited to see what they do against Vereen and against Eli. If you have not seen the highlights, watch Fletcher Cox's highlights. Fletcher Cox had 3 sacks this game. He had 2 forced fumbles. And one of the forced fumbles, he goes, knocks it out of Breeze's hands, then slams Breeze's head into the ground as he goes and recovers his own fumble. He's a beast. J.J. Watt ain't got nothing on Cox. That's what I'm saying, and I believe it. And you're going to see it. J.J. Cox and Logan are going to be amazing against your guys' team and are going to be really wreaking havoc. I feel pretty confident about this win. I'm curious that we both feel this way. You're coming into our house. We're wearing our black uniforms. We've been on a little bit of a roll. The only thing that worries me is if our offense doesn't get going. If our offense gets going and we score 35 points as we are wont to do, I don't see you guys having a chance. I'm going to guess score my final score in the game. I'm going to say 35-17. I want to point out we also shut you out last year. I think it was like 27-0. So, like, that is possible. Odell Beckham played in that game, and he did not do anything. I understand it was before everyone realized he was amazing, but he should have known he was amazing. What do you think? What is your final score?
I think it's Giants 27, Eagles 17. You guys just haven't played very good teams. I don't know where all this excitement is coming from. Like, you guys,
but you're not a very good congratulations. Team, I think, is the line.
I think we're better than the Saints.
No, I mean, everyone's better than the Saints. We put up 30. We beat them 39-10. I mean, that wasn't even – it was 17 at the end because they tore them in the last seconds.
We beat the Redskins. You guys did not.
We almost did. That was very close.
For all intents and purposes, we beat the Cowboys and Falcons. Like, it's
beating the Falcons will give you – that's the one team you guys have on us. But our team – coming together.
Beat the Falcons. We lost. We also lost to the Falcons. We just gave it away. I think in the Giants' losses, they looked more impressive than the Eagles had in theirs. And I think that's where the difference happens. I think both teams are good when they're good. But what I just think the Eagles have a lower floor. I think when things go wrong for this team, you can see just bad things happening. And that's where they are.
I think we have a much better roster. But that's why I think, like, overall talent, we just have a lot more talent, and it wasn't playing together. But if it comes together, I think there's no comparison the levels of talents of these two teams. Just because you guys don't have a tight end that really scares me, I mean, Donnell's not bad, but we have Ertz and Selleck, who I'd take both of those guys over yours. Our running backs, I'd take all 3 running backs over yours. You have the great receiver, but then after that, everyone else, I would take ours. The offensive line has not been playing well for the Eagles, but they did this last game, and if they play well against you, who you don't have a good defensive line. Like, your best defensive lineman right now is a guy who we kicked off our team a couple years ago. It's going to be interesting. I'm glad we both are confident. I will definitely be tweeting at you, brother.
The Giants offensive line has been impressive. You know, starting three young guys. I just wanted to get that out there. Richburg, Schwartz, and Flowers. I mean, sorry, Richburg, Pugh, and Flowers are really holding down that left side of the line. It's been impressive.
I'm excited. Also, just one last question. Those are good moves. Go ahead.
Yeah. How are you guys going to stop the real best defensive player in the league, Nikita Whitlock? Fullback turn.
I love that you bring him up. I saw a little bit of him. He looks awesome. I do expect him to get at least one sack or one tackle for a loss late in the game when he comes in for his 8 snaps. That dude's a beast. I love it. I love that you brought him up. He's awesome.
Yeah, how many 5'11", 249 defensive tackles are drawing holding penalties on? You know,
he was a fullback for you guys, right?
Able to put their hands. He's still a fullback.
He's a fullback. He's playing double duty. That's amazing. Oh, man, that's amazing. I love watching him play. Yeah, he's great. That is awesome. We will end it on him. Salute to you. I will allow him to have one great play. But other than that, man, thanks for being here for the Super Battle. I'll be talking to you on Monday night.